Welcome back to Cure Talks Cancer, a weekly podcast powered by Cure on what we do best, cancer updates, research, and education. Each week, we sit down with patients, survivors, caregivers, and healthcare professionals across the whole cancer journey. New episodes are now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Let's get into it.
Well, Rob, hi. Thank you so much for taking the time. It's an honor and a privilege to meet you today and talk with you for Cure. We were really excited at the opportunity. Cure is our brand. We're very healthcare focused here, and Cure is our consumer brand for patients and caregivers at any and every stage throughout their cancer journey, from diagnosis through survivorship. So I do think that all of the details that were shared with me about you and this campaign and your grandmother and her journey, I really think is going to resonate with our audience. So thank you so much.
Great. I was doing my little due diligence on you guys, and I thought, this is the audience. This is it.
It's yes, it is. So if it's okay, I'd like to start with your grandmother.
Sure. So
what can you tell me about your grandmother's breast cancer journey? And at what point was clinical trials discussed? What can you maybe share about the trials and treatments that she was on?
Sure. So with the caveat that I was really young when this all first started, so there are a lot of details that I don't remember, but the notion that I do remember being that young speaks to how disruptive, scary, uncertain it is for that to make its way down through literally the generations of the family. And the good news about it is that it prolonged her life. When she did pass, she was the longest surviving breast cancer patient of her time at the Cleveland Clinic.
Wow.
Cancer. Yeah. So as I went on the journey with her, as I got older, I remember and was present for so much of it. And I know that she, like most people, and one of the reasons we're talking, it was sort of a last ditch entry into a clinical trial, and which made it even more dramatic. Come in. Sorry, I'm getting my coffee delivered to me. Come in. And she was told to get her affairs in order twice, and both times this new drug, and I'm too young to know what she was put on, prolonged her life.
It was mentioned too that you've had multiple family members be impacted by cancer. And did you notice as time went on and treatment advances began to transpire across the different cancer types that exist, that there was maybe different kinds of understanding, different expectations, things like that as time went on?
Well, I have seen in my own family, their journey with my mother, my great grandmother, my father. The women all had breast cancer. My dad was a 2-time non-Hodgkin's lymphoma survivor. He's 80. He's going to be 87 wow. in September. Ugh. He's doing great. And so I've seen the highs and I've seen the lows. I've seen the hope and the promise. I mean, when my grandma was diagnosed with breast cancer, the standard care was double mastectomy. There was like, oh, boom, you're done. I mean, it's insane to think about today. So I always like to lead with the progress and with the, I know a lot of people are very scared of AI and maybe for good reasons, but what that's going to do to this industry is going to be revolutionary. And this is a very good time to be alive with in the health realm. But to answer your question, what I've really learned is, and it kind of speaks to the AI bright future component, is that we need more people to participate in these trials. And it's not an altruistic thing. That's like a benefit. But again, my grandma, it was like, oh, nothing else is working. We're at the end of possibilities. Let's do this. You know, what people will realize is you can do it immediately. You're still going to get the exact same care, but better, because you're going to have an entire new set of eyes, ears, brains on your case than you would have. And you're open to the possibility of having something new and great that nobody else has.
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head. And also, too, with AI, great points, because there is so much happening in there right now. And all, again, like all cancer types. So it's really an incredible thing at this point. Watching your grandmother's trajectory from being told to get her affairs in order to then surviving with these trials, what did that do to your understanding of hope in the context of a cancer diagnosis?
Well, because I was young, I have a different perspective now than I had then. As then, it was really from the time I was 8, 9, 10, and then it was really formative all the way through my, you know, growing up into a adolescent into teen, that was hanging around the family. And, you know, the feeling of it was like this intruder lurking around the house that sometimes we were able to keep it out. And other times it looks like it was breaking in. So it was like always sort of lurking, which hugely affected my relationship with my grandma, who I adored. I mean, she was my favorite of the, I mean, she was, we were extraordinarily close, but as you get older, your mortality is a part of your life. It's not a part naturally as a kid, but it was for me, because I knew that my time with her could be very limited. And and yeah, full stop.
No, it makes sense. And, you know, you've carried this story of your grandmother around with you for decades. And can you talk a little bit about the partnership that's driving this campaign and what made this the moment for you to really kind of go public with it?
Well, I have a history I'm really grateful for of being an advocate in this space going back to 2003. I think I was the first male spokesman for breast cancer awareness, again, in honor of the low women. And ever since then, advocacy in the space has been an ongoing, consistent part of my life. So when I was approached by Lilly, I immediately said yes, because I get so much out of being an advocate and doing stuff in memory of my, not just my grandma, my father, not memory of my father, he's still around, but also the people out there that I get to meet when I do this, because the hope and the strength that you get from people and the perspective on life, you truly can't buy and you can't get anywhere else. And it was such an authentic partnership. I was and am really excited to be a part of it. And also, I got to just say, when they told me why they wanted to do this, the numbers, they're like, I think we're in single digits in terms of how many newly diagnosed patients talk or know about the possibility of doing something like this, is those numbers are insane, and they're the lowest in the world, I believe. I think Europe's are better, so we got to get the word out.
Yeah. When you brought this up before, and just being able to connect with other people that are on this journey, for someone, and maybe it's a patient or maybe it's a caregiver that has only heard of the term clinical trial in passing, yeah, as you're connecting with these people, what do you want them to know about that?
I want them to know a number of things. One is a clinical trial is not only for, it is for people on every step of their journey with cancer. It is not something that you should only consider when you've been down the road and the options are limited. You should be considering it when at the very, very, very beginning. There are plenty of people who benefit immediately from stuff like this. The other thing would be is I know that people are all worried that they would get a placebo. That's a big thing. And what I would say is you're going to get the exact same care that you would be getting anyway. You literally, truly have nothing to lose. I mean, truly. And everything to gain. I mean, if ever there was a dictionary definition of that, it would be this. Being in a clinical trial invites in, like what we've been talking about, the most amazing sort of group of researchers and doctors. And, you know, I doing this, I get to travel the country and meet the people doing it. And it is so impressive. And you don't get access to this whole segment of the health industry if you don't do it. And then the other thing is the notion that this helps medical advances for others. And the more we have in clinical trials, the quicker we get to the next generation of treatments. So it's really simple. It's a very simple message.
Yes, and very well said. And you mentioned this before with patients having a fear of potentially getting a placebo. Do you think that there is other reasons for any kind of hesitancy why patients may be fearful to speak up about advocating for themselves for a trial? Is it the fear?
And then just thank you for bringing this up, because this is something that has been a part of all the messaging that I do whenever I'm speaking in this world. And that is, we have the best doctors in the world, but nobody can advocate for your health like you. And doctors have a lot on their plate. Doctors are just like anybody else. There are great ones, there are good ones, there are not good ones. And it is incumbent upon the patient to take control of their treatment. And I have such sympathy and empathy for people who are unable to do that. I can only imagine there's a huge list of reasons. So hopefully you have someone who can do that. I was able to do that for my mother, but you've got to advocate, and you can't advocate unless you know what to advocate for. So this would be on that list. I like to tell people, you know, obviously ask about clinical trials, but, you know, bring in it today. You know, when I started, it was a tape recorder.
Yeah.
Get a tape recorder into the meeting. Now it's just record on your phone the meeting with your doctor. Because I get it. It's overwhelming. There's so many technical things coming at you, and you're already emotionally unmoored by what's going on. You truly don't process it. So you go home, and when you have your wits about you, you listen, you write questions, you go, what about this? And you go back to your doctor. But that is the other reason that people don't do it, is they are not really prepared or able or knowledgeable or know to advocate for their own treatment.
It's so much to process. And you made a point too about, you know, you're going through the tape recorder and you're thinking of questions to ask. Do you have suggested questions that a patient might want to bring up to their oncologist when they're talking about a clinical trial?
I would just, to me, I mean, here's the other thing is, I mean, today we have AI and listen, it's such a new world. I mean, if it were me, I could just say, if it were me, God forbid, I would literally at every single thing that they recommended, I said, and what would be another option? I would just say it as a matter of response, because you never, I just actually went through this with a doctor on a different issue, minor issue. And he had no idea that something was also being used for something. And like, you know, they're learning like we are.
Right.
I would be using, you know, Claude or OpenAI. And having that conversation, you should treat advocating for yourself like your life depends on it, because it does.
My final question, if your grandmother was alive today, what do you think she would say to a patient who was afraid to go on a clinical trial?
She would say she understands. She would say, yes, the whole journey is scary, but this part of the journey need not be, because it doesn't change anything for the negative. Whatever your fate, whatever your journey, whatever your treatment, nothing changes. It only potentially gets better.
Thank you, Rob. This was fantastic. We appreciate your time so much. Thank you for chatting with Cure.
Thank you. And thank you for the great work you guys do.
Well, it's a really a win-win for everybody. So
that's what I say about being in this segment. It's like, this is makes right. my day.
There's no drawbacks. Good.
No drawbacks. No downside.
Okay. Thank you. Have a safe flight later too.
Thanks, you guys.